Hi there, and welcome back to the Energy Sector Heroes podcast. My name is Michelle Fraser, and every week I will speak with incredible people who share their lessons, experiences, and stories from their time spent in the energy sector. Hi there, and welcome back again to this week's episode. If you're new to the show, then please take a second to subscribe and even consider sharing the show with just one other person. This week I am joined by Michael Molsef. Michael is the CEO of Rigor. Michael, would you like to introduce yourself, please?
Sure. Hello, everyone. My name is Michael Molsef, and I'm CEO of Rigor. We started the business around 12 years ago, and our main focus is the oilfield operations software, focusing on the oilfield service and rental companies operations.
Okay, that sounds really interesting. So how did you get started in the energy sector?
Oh, I moved to Canada from Belarus around 15 years ago, and I never touched the oil and gas industry, always focusing on the IT and accounting. And that happened that I was being placed as a controller to the oilfield service companies, which provide the last mile solution for the oil field in Canada and in the North US. And after that, just happened. And I really love the industry, the attitude, the quality of the people, the hardworking and very responsible. So I just love the oil and gas industry.
Yeah, me too. It's quite an amazing space to be in, even just now with all the transitions going on. So did you have any role models in your career, and why did you find them inspirational?
It's really, really tough to say the role models. Definitely, we see the entrepreneurial examples of Steve Jobs and Elon Musk and other great people. So the probably most important would be the entrepreneurial skills and oil and gas in North America, especially. It's very entrepreneurial. Lots of new startups starting every single year, and this probably, you know, just push you to that direction to innovate and think differently and help to run the business smoothly, the oil and gas industry, to help optimize the oil and gas industry as well.
Okay. Is it really difficult to create a startup?
To create is not difficult. To run, to grow, it's really tough and hard, especially with the attitude that the entire industry is very conservative. Everyone wants to be innovative, but nobody wants to be a pioneer. So that's a very critical to find the first and the second client, and after that you can, you know, show the examples, you know, provide some feedback and case studies, and that's probably a number one task which any startup and any new organization needs to do in the oil and gas, because, you know, I know that other industries can be more open for the new businesses, but oil and gas is very, very conservative.
Okay. You were saying something really interesting, actually, that not everybody wanted to be a pioneer, but everybody wanted to be innovative. How? I've never heard that before. Why? Can you explain why?
You know, the industry itself is very risky. We know that the safety is the top priority, and people like to be predictable and run with the predictable results. Pioneering means all the time, you know, increase the risk, increase the unpredictability of the operation. So that is why, you know, most of the people want to avoid that unnecessary risk sometimes. So it's really tough to start something new and, you know, run something differently. Because, you know, in many cases, it will require and extra resources from the organization, and again, can bring more risk to the operations. So that is why nobody wants to be a pioneer, wants to be the follower, wants to be, you know, the second or maybe third company who tried something.
Okay. I think it would be quite a big risk as well to be a pioneer, though.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, our story was quite interesting because we started in Canada and focusing on the Canadian market. But after 3 years of developing the software here in Canada, we decided to move to US and penetrate US market, which is 11 times bigger than Canadian one. And it was quite interesting experience because the mentality and the attitude, it's quite different from Canadian business to US business. We find that this is way entrepreneurial and easygoing. And we've been quite successful in US last 10 years. So we see more business coming from US than Canada.
So okay.
US is the number one market for us right now.
Okay. Why would that be? Because I thought that Canada was quite booming just now.
Unfortunately, not, especially the last 7 years. It was anti-industrial government, the federal level. And recently it was on a provincial level here in Alberta. So, and the industry being in, you know, survival mode, and most of our clients, and we saw that they just shifting to the south. So even if they keep headquarters in Canada, all the operations move to Permian Basin or any other states in the United States. So because you know, people have technology, they have equipment, they have people. But unfortunately, the job and number of jobs shrinking, and the service company have to do something about that. And the kind of a normal decision was to move south.
Okay, that's interesting. So, what is the most challenging thing about your current role?
I would say that again, with all the new technologies and all the modern communication tools, we still need to be people stay people, and especially that COVID time, it was quite challenging to have in person communications and in person meetings, because even if we work in B2B business, so we're still working with person-to-person relationship and building those relationship and open the doors, it's probably a number one challenge for us right now.
Okay. So how did COVID actually affect your business and how did you get around it?
It's quite interesting experience. So again, we've been a bit lucky to have a couple of clients who decided to take advantage of the COVID downturn and re-establish and implement rigor, re-establish the internal systems and implement rigor those days. So we've been quite busy from one perspective. From another perspective, we lost several clients, not because of they decided to not use rigor, but they decided to go out of business. Some of the clients, they just shifting and moved to the different industries. Some of the clients, they decided to quit.
But that would be a difficult decision to take, just to quit. That would be really difficult, though.
Definitely. And I spoke with several persons and they decided that they told that, you know, we survived like six, downturns, and it's quite challenging to do everything from scratch again and again. So we probably will move to a different direction, different industry. So, yeah. And definitely when we talk about the entire demand and technology developing, so the service industry is quite dynamic, and again, as I mentioned, I started with the telecom company, and in 3 years, all the telecom equipment become obsolete because of developing other technologies. Say, for example, when I started, the phone calls with the field was quite exciting, and everyone wants to have a phone calls to the field and have this ability, kind of having phone calls every single minute or whatever. But in 2 or 3 years, nobody wants to have only phone calls. Everyone wants to have a video calls, which required a completely different set of telecom equipment. So in this regard, the entire industry is shifting, and so to stay in the business become more and more challenging. So, and of course, COVID hit dramatically, and it was a time when nobody had any ideas how the system, the entire industry will develop in the future. And we have an unprecedented push from renewable energy and renewable technologies those days. And everyone wants to move to the green energy. No offense to green energy, but again, the traditional oil and gas industry still required. Say here in Alberta, yes, last week we had a minus 40 Celsius freeze, and it was an issue with the electricity grid. We had not enough power to generate, because you know, the coal plant was shut down, and everything moved to the renewable, which is wind and solar. But in minus 40, there is no wind, and everything covered by all the solar panels covered by snow. So it was zero power generation from renewables, and it was kind of a crisis, the energy crisis in Canada, in Alberta, Western Canada, those days last week. So it's not that easy and simple transition. We need to take the account the risks, which you know, considering the that kind of circumstance. Same thing right now happening in Texas. They have abnormal cold weather, and the last time they have a kind of an energy system collapse. Just right now monitoring and see how things going there. So it's quite interesting to see this kind of a transition. But again, we need to take to the account that the renewable energy not very very stable, I would put it that way.
Okay. I never really thought about it like that, because to not be able to use the renewables because of the severe bad weather would be quite a big challenge.
Exactly. And the question is, like, if it's a couple of days, it's probably not a big deal. You can run from the reserves. But if it's, you know, months or even more than 1 month, it could be a very very dramatic and very disastrous event in this case.
Okay, that's something to consider in the future, I would think so. So, have you ever had any career disasters?
I don't know. The life is very very interesting. It was not a disaster. Maybe a disaster when I was this situation, but right now when I see this situation, it's quite interesting. So it was the time when I was a chief accountant, and I decided to go. It was a conflict with the owner, and I decided to quit and just. No, any options and plan B. Just step back and went out. Have no idea what to do next. Surprise, surprise! Next day, I received two offers. It was quite shocking for me. So again, it's I don't want to call this a catastrophic event, but it was kind of eye-open event. So.
But that's amazing, though, because it must have been really hard to quit any job.
Absolutely. Especially if you spend like 5 years, 7 years with the company, and you think that the entire world is just around this. But when you see it's on a little bit different angle, different from different perspective, you see another opportunities. So yeah, sometimes it's very, very important to, step aside or step back and see the full picture and understand that situation is not that flat.
Okay. But then when you got your new job offers, that must have been a turning point in your career, though.
It was actually because it was more entrepreneurial and demanding more, demanding a different skill set to run these operations and run this business. It was still a controller, but it more required more communication, working with more people, and was quite exciting. And yeah, definitely, I think it was a pivotal point for the entire career.
Okay. So you run your own company just now. How did you get the idea to create it?
It was quite interesting because again, back home in Belarus, I run my own business. We develop software for different type of organizations, but not energy and oil and gas connected. It was a transportation, retail, wholesale, agricultural, the different types of organizations, but not oil and gas. And when I facing with the situation that operations here is quite challenging, and I can give you an example. It was the around 25 field technicians running the business and running the jobs every single day, with the, I would say, three to four jobs per day, with 6 to 10 different pieces of equipment in each ticket. So it was quite a big chunk of movements, and everything was tracking in Excel spreadsheets. And you can imagine, like, when you receive 25 a different Excel spreadsheets every single day. We had five dispatchers who sort those things, and what they do the next day, the same thing. It was kind of a lots of manual work. And the peak record for the month of January, I remember it was I just saw that it was like more than 100,000 records in one Excel spreadsheet file. It was enormous, and it was like not quite easy to navigate and apply prices and generate invoices based on those tickets. So it was the idea of the software to build the software for the organization. And when I look around, I saw that the other companies are facing the same challenges, and it was kind of a demand. And because I had the previous experience from my own business, I decided to start and try the new avenue of my life, and build the startup, and providing that kind of solution to the rental companies. And the rest is history. Like 10 years after, we one of the leading oil and gas operation software in North America, and expanding globally as well. We have clients in Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, and we see the Middle East as a very potential, a good region for us. We see the good potential of the digitalizations of oilfield operations there.
Okay. So what kind of software do you provide to the oil and gas industry?
So we consider ourselves as a ERP operational extension of the ERP. The traditional ERP system focuses on the financial results and financial transactions of the organizations. But unfortunately, we see the gap between CRM, which is focusing on the sales, and ERP, which focusing on the accounting. So the operations are not covered, and we have a gap between CRM and ERP. And we fill out this gap by Rigger for oil field service companies. So the main process of scheduling job, dispatching jobs, running those jobs, control tickets, control equipment, monitor all the equipment transactions like purchasing, moving to the field, back pre-job inspection, post-job inspections, maintenance, repairs, rework, all kind of different assembling, disassembling of the equipment, which is quite heavy in the oil and gas, and generating invoices based on the job operations and send invoices to the ERP. It's big and wide software package with more than 20 different modules, which can be enabled or disabled depending on the client requirements. We have several configurations specifically with the sub-industry, say, for example, downhole tools, focusing on the heavy assembled operations with the downhole tools, kind of drilling motors, stators, rotors, all kind of that operations, which required a lot of paperwork, which we eliminate, and required an advanced planning tools and skills, because you need to build a particular configuration of the tool in advance. So our system dealing with that and focusing on that operations. We have configurations for the surface equipment like light towers, generators, portable toilets, any surface equipment running in the field. We have offshore configuration for the offshore equipment tracking. So again, our main focus is the equipment-centric oilfield services and offshore services.
Okay, so does your software then monitor the performance of the equipment offshore then?
It could be, but again, our main aim, our main purpose is the tracking of the equipment and providing history of each serial number. Say, for example, we have a serial number, we have all the certificates for the serial number, and we can provide the entire history of this serial number, what kind of job, how many hours, etc.
Okay. I think I've used software like that before. It's quite an amazing type of software, actually, for an engineer, because the type of information you can subtract from the software is quite amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, our main competitor still is Excel spreadsheets and paperwork and whiteboards. We had a client call a couple years ago, and he told Michael, I have no space at my wall for the whiteboard, so I need a software. You know, all the scheduling, planning in oil and gas is just the big whiteboards, you know, moving equipment, moving crews and people around the jobs. And it's in many cases, it's very challenging. And we're providing that solution to them to help them to manage and navigate everything on the laptop, on the computer, on the mobile phones and tablets. And again, our approach is to provide the entire full cycle solution from the field technician to the top manager, CEO, providing the operational dashboards. We call it operations management dashboards, which is a set of the dashboard, you know, tracking the entire performance of the a rental fleet, field technicians, trucks, revenue, allocation of the revenue between different departments, different line of businesses, different services, etc. So more than 20 different dashboards presenting the performance of the organization.
Yeah, it is quite an amazing type. It is quite an amazing software to get involved with. I mean, I've only used it once previously, but I think it's going to be quite revolutionary for the oil and gas industry.
Oh yeah, for sure. When we started, the number one question was, guys, we need to have the mobile field ticket. And the challenge with a mobile field ticket here in North America is that not all the fields covering by satellite or cellular signal. So there is no access to the internet. So it should be offline mobile ticket. And we've been the first organization who creates the offline mobile tickets with full offline mobile capabilities. It was kind of the 3 years of development because it was different experiments and testing, checking different service providers, I mean, telecom providers, understanding how they operate, what is the coverage, and how fast we can synchronize, what we can synchronize, what is the limitations of the devices. It was lots of it. And one of the discovery which we made those days that the cloud software, it's one thing, and mobile software is completely different story. It's a different animal, and that beast need to have a different type of the attention, and requires a lots of preparation, and we have some restrictions, physical restrictions, first of all, because the tiny screen, you couldn't put like the 25 column table to your phone. You need to think about design, redesign, or maybe you're not even showing that table there.
Okay. So is there any pitfalls to using this software?
It's, I would say that when we talk about digitalization, the number one question is not the technology. The number one question is the organization, the discipline, the way how the users organized and how the information flow organized in the organization. So I would say that in many cases, the implementation of the software focusing not only on the technical side of how to use what kind of button to press, but organizing the processes within the organizations, understanding who is responsible for what kind of a step-by-step process should be designed or should be in place for this or that scenario. So like kind of describing all those scenarios is a number one step for us for the implement the software. And in the, some organizations could be a very, very challenging. And for us is important to see if the organization has any experience with the implementation of the software, because the systematic approach is probably number one element of the software implementation and okay. Success of their project.
Okay. So what is your zone of genius? What are you most good at?
I have no idea. Maybe communication and run as a translator from the business requirements. Because I'm personally not coding. I'm not personally developing any piece of the software. But my main goal is to understand what is business requirement and explain this to the developers. And if we see any limitations to explain and translate this from developer's language to the business language to the management level, so they can understand what kind of challenges and restrictions we have inside the system. Because in many cases, and you probably faced that situation many times when sales and accounting and operations start talking to each other, they spoke completely different languages.
Yeah, that's right.
So I'm a translator.
Yeah. Do you think it's harder to run a company, a tech company, not having the background knowledge?
I would say the most challenging is to find the right people to build a team. And for us, it's very, very long process. So we always open for the new people always searching for the good people. And again, There are several components which we need to put together and see if the person has that, because the person should be a professional in the area where we like to use their skills. And from another perspective, it should be a good team player, understanding and respect others. And that kind of combination, it's quite challenging. And especially when we talk about IT and oil and gas, that combination is very rare.
Yeah, it is actually. I do agree, actually. But so how do you ensure that you do have the correct people? What do you look for when you're hiring someone?
First of all, we'd like to see they'd like to change the status quo, to be useful for the organization, for the industry, for the world, to do something new, to understand the mission. Because again, our mission is to digitalize the oil and gas, to make the industry more efficient and have a less footprint, use less paper, and run the operation smoothly. It's a big goal and big task, required lots of effort. And for us, it's very important that idea is be inside the person. They understand and they want to run together. It's kind of important for us to see that kind of fire inside. So because you know, if you go to the job for like 8 to 5, it's probably not our case.
Okay, because I think you do have to put in extra hours, especially if it's a small company, maybe in any company actually.
Yeah, and again, we are not a big company. We have around 20 person globally. We have people in Ireland, Canada, US, and Eastern Europe. So the entire organization size, you know, make any new person very important and very responsible for the entire team to success. And in this case, we need to be very cautious about with whom we, you know, moving forward.
Okay. So is there anything in your career that you still want to achieve then?
We set the goals for the each year. Achieving in the career, I have no idea, like the Olympic gold medal, if it still exists in the business. I definitely want to grow the company, want to continue as much as possible to reach that goal, which we set as our mission, to digitalize oil and gas, with some maybe some pivotal turns in as the next steps, but not exactly kind of a goal which or medal which I'd like to achieve. You know, it's just fulfilling the mission, and I know that this mission probably not achievable in my lifetime, but I'd like to see that perspective outside my life.
Okay, I'm pretty sure you're going to achieve it, actually. I think so. So
the industry is quite big, so we understand our efforts. So yeah, we trying to do what we can do.
I think you'll get it. I think you'll achieve amazing things, actually. So what keeps you motivated when times get tough?
The idea that when you understand that, you know, what the thing which you do is important to other people, that people appreciate it, that help you to move forward. And tough times happening every year, and you know, sometimes you do not see where to go and how to continue. But in this case, you know, just I believe it's time to step back and probably relax, spend time with the family and friends. So kind of that and understand that the that what you do is the things which you do is important for other people, and they still need it. So that's just move you forward with the through the tough times.
Okay.
Because I remember that COVID, then COVID hit it. It was quite tough. And one of the decision we made, I asked everyone, because again we have allocated team, and we had the Zoom meetings maybe once a week or maybe once in 2 weeks, like the entire organization. So what I did, I asked the guys to join like a 1 hour session every single day, just to talk. So to have a feeling that you are not alone. And I suppose that help the keep the team together. And people need to talk, we need to communicate. And we not talk about the business problem, or we talk about just how people talk. All kind of different things, discussing what happening every single day. And it was a quite interesting experiment, and at least for myself, it was very helpful.
Okay. But I think the time during COVID, I think every company had to increase their communications to increase and better their communication skills. Because I think before, a lot of companies were just having face-to-face meetings and they might not have been very productive for us. Whereas I think now, I think a lot more companies are more productive.
It's very true, yes. What we see right now with us and with our clients, that the number of people in the office shrinking dramatically. So right now, people work from home or from at the hybrid mode. Again, the intercompany communications become very challenging. So we're trying to have our meetings quite regular, maybe once a month, maybe once a week, depending on what kind of questions we have. But yes, and I receiving feedback from my guys that it's important for them as well.
Yeah, I think so too. I think so too. So I'm going to wrap things up. If you could turn back time, would you change anything?
No, I don't think so. I'm quite happy person. So I think that what happened, it should happen, and we just need to understand what kind of lesson we need to take from each of the event and move forward.
I think that's amazing. That's an amazing answer, actually. I really like that. Okay, that's all the questions I have today. I would like to thank Michael for your time. That brings us to the end of another episode. Thanks for listening and see you next week. That brings us to the end of another episode. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, I'd like to gently encourage you to leave a 5-star rating wherever you listen to podcasts and share the show with another person. You can also follow me on LinkedIn or via my website, www.michellefraserconsultancy.com. Thanks again for listening and see you next week.